Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Asma Khalid. So as most of you probably know, my day job when I'm not filling in for Meghna is leading Bostonomics. That's WBUR's new biz and tech team. And one thing I've been experimenting with is co-reporting some stories with my NPR colleague, Aarti Shahani. She's based in Silicon Valley. We're both fascinated with beauty tech. It's this multi-million dollar industry that isn't traditionally seen as tech. Now, Aarti and I are also both South Asian women, and as any brown woman can tell you, hair, body hair, and figuring out how to get rid of unwanted hair is kind of a cultural obsession. Waxing, tweezing, threading, we have pretty much tried it all. And so naturally, when laser hair removal came out, we both also tried it. And we're not alone. In fact, laser hair removal is one of the most popular non-invasive cosmetic procedures in the country. Last year, it was performed over a million times. So when we found out the man who invented laser hair removal, Dr. Rox Anderson, is based here in Boston at Mass General Hospital, we sought him out for an interview. We met in his office, where the walls are lined with patents, many related to lasers. And we began with a basic question. What is a laser?
Most people have a gut feeling for what a laser is. It's a very bright source of light, that the light is somehow a pure color, and the output is as a beam. So the characteristics of lasers are you can focus a lot of power, you can get these short pulses. It's literally the most powerful light sources we have on Earth, so we can concentrate that light. What's in the guts of a laser is really interesting. The quantum of light is called a photon. And inside the laser, the photons are literally being amplified at the molecular level.
So how do you do that?
Well, this came from Einstein, our good old friend Albert, long ago, about a century ago, had a theoretical prediction that you could take an excited atom and tickle it to emit a photon, that one photon could beget another photon. So you go from one to two. And then two to four, and four to eight, and it's an exponential process.
So a laser is an accumulation of excited atoms that you're tickling.
It starts with the excited atoms, but the excited atoms produce photons of light, and they act as an amplifier.
But what's being tickled?
The excited atom is tickled by a photon to create an identical photon.
So the
laser is actually an acronym. It stands for light amplified by stimulated emission of radiation. L-A-S-E-R.
I never knew that.
That's wow.
Right. I thought laser is like one of those words in the Merriam-Webster dictionary.
I assume it had some Greek root. I thought it was just a Greek root word.
Well, I think it
or Latin.
I haven't looked it up for a long time.
It probably is in the dictionary.
It probably is a real word, but it is an acronym word. First laser was invented in 1960. And it was a ruby laser, a large ruby crystal pumped with energy from a flash lamp. And if you want to see that, that's sitting in the Smithsonian Institute.
Huh.
What's interesting about laser hair removal, we did it 30 years, more than 30 years after the invention of the ruby laser. And the first laser we used was a ruby laser.
So it's red, the ruby laser. Why isn't it violet?
To do laser hair removal, we had to pick a wavelength that was preferentially absorbed by the pigment melanin, which is what gives your hair the color it has. Mm-hmm. It's also, in a way, unfortunately, what gives your skin the color it has. So we had to figure out a way to sneak photons through the skin down into where the hair follicle is. And it turns out that red and near-infrared wavelengths can do that. You get enough absorption in the hair without hurting the overlying pigmented skin.
So just so I'm clear, you're saying that this red laser, right, would be able to correctly kind of penetrate your skin and identify, it would be absorbed by the hair follicle without really hurting or burning your skin.
Yeah, depending on other conditions.
Ideally.
So if you're very, very dark skinned, that it's a challenge to do laser hair removal in somebody who's really very dark skinned. But it's even worse of a challenge to do laser hair removal in someone who has very light hair. And we do all sorts of things to favor the hair damage, not the skin damage. Unfortunately, in dark-skinned people, sometimes that's probably the major one of the major side effects of laser hair removal. If you're darker-skinned, we have to turn the lasers down. You have to cool the surface of the skin and so forth.
Just walk us through, Rox. Where were you and when you discovered, oh, I can use a laser to do this?
Especially because you said the technology had already been out there, right? It wasn't like you developed this new technology. You figured out it could do something that nobody else had ever really thought of before.
Yeah, tell us the story of how that happened.
Well, it's actually a good story because I never would have done this if it weren't for a woman named Melanie Grossman, who came up to work with me from New York City, and she was working with me on some other projects. And whenever I bring somebody new, young doctor, into the lab to be trained, I only tell them sort of what to do with half their time. The other half, I say, well, what do you want to do? She said, well, I would like to do laser hair removal. My response, of course, was, why would you ever want to do that?
Was she hairy?
No, she wasn't particularly hairy. And she kind of, you know, stared at me like, you know, I was a Martian. Because, I mean, frankly, it just wasn't even on my mind. If it wasn't for Melanie, I never would have done it. And, in fact, all good things often will start this way, where it's the problem that leads you on your path to discovery and then finally success, as opposed to some new technology. So the laser had been around for 30 years. I owned one in the lab for many, many years prior to ever doing this project. And what we did was we basically started looking at the structure of hair follicles in people, how much pigment is in there. Our first patients were hairy dogs, not hairy people, black-haired dogs. So we made some
hair. Like labs or what?
Oh, I can't even remember what they were. This is more than 20 years ago. Okay. And I have dogs. I love dogs. Right? But no dogs were harmed in the process.
Uh-huh.
Some of them
just might lose some hair.
But we quickly...
Maybe shamed, but not harmed. Sorry.
Yeah, perhaps continue. In the dog world, yeah. So, but we quickly moved it toward people. The actual first paper that came out, I think it was 1994, it was really the first study was done in human beings. Mm-hmm. And I was one of the subjects. And I still have a bald spot on my arm.
Can we see it?
Because when we got this to the FDA, you know, the FDA approves new devices and drugs, and we weren't sure what to call it. And there was a big debate about whether this would be permanent or not.
But were you ever concerned, like, maybe this will cause skin cancer too? Or something?
There's always a risk. I mean, I think there's nothing here on this planet that's risk-free. Mm-hmm. But this is visible light that we're exposed to every day. The sun has got plenty of red light in it. It's just that we're putting a lot of it in at a short period of time. So I'm happy to say there have been many millions of patients treated for laser hair removal, and it's not associated at all with producing cancer.
So Rox, when you did that first little square patch on your arm, two questions. One, what did it feel like? Mm-hmm. And two, did you know then what you had created?
It felt like being hit with a rubber band pretty well. And it was actually
Dr. What it feels like now, too.
Yeah. And Dr. Grossman did that to me. I was the first of our subjects in the human trial. And so to answer the second part of your question, this is my version of the golden rule. Do unto yourself before you do unto others. Okay? If I, as a physician and a professor at Harvard Medical School, am willing to put someone else at risk for something like hair removal, I darn well better try it out on myself first. The ethics of that are really interesting. You're not supposed to do self-experimentation, but for something like this, I think it's actually unethical not to.
And the second question.
The second part was, did you know when you did that little patch what you had created?
Oh, yeah. I did not. We were at the beginning, and it takes at least 6 months to be able to see whether the hair will regrow. Human hair has a cycle time. On the head of a woman, it's 10 years, right? Huh. On the arm of a man, it's about 4 months. If you get what I'm saying, there's a clock inside every hair follicle.
Yeah.
And we wanted to make sure that clock was not ticking. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I know when I was doing laser, so for me, it worked amazingly well. Mm-hmm. And I would just say completely transformed my self-image.
Great.
So like because I had that combination of, I have a tan right now, but my skin is in general lighter and my hair was very coarse. Mm-hmm. And basically, I did laser, I think, in 2012. I haven't shaved or waxed since then.
Right.
And I wear skirts all the time. Right. It just completely changed.
And that's the majority of people have your good experience with that.
Yeah.
But it's sometimes hard to sort out.
And that's the part that I want to get to. What's funny is I almost didn't do it because I looked online and I heard all these horror stories about extra growth. And then you go to like some salon where no one has a medical background, but they want to take your money. And so it's actually like I did it because I was that frustrated. But I literally went into it thinking, am I going to give myself cancer or more hair? I have no idea.
Or burns. I mean, this was another thing that happened. Yeah. I had a friend who got burns. And these are all people who had somewhat of the, you know, darker skin complexion.
As I was saying, the darker the skin, the more difficult it is. And, you know, it's even in good hands, people will have skin burns with laser hair removal.
If I'm someone who's thinking about laser hair removal, who's a good candidate for this? Who isn't a good candidate for this? What should you watch out for?
Yeah, those are great questions. So good candidates are people with dark hair and fair skin in which the hair is coarse. And the bad candidates are the opposite. They're people with dark skin and fair hair. There aren't too many of those. But when people, particularly women, when you hit menopause, a little nasty combination of things happens, which is your estrogen levels go down. And at the same time, your hair is turning white. And so some women will grow facial hair suddenly at menopause, and it's white. And don't be fooled. There is no laser or IPL that can remove white hair. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's not a good candidate for this treatment either.
Mm-hmm. And what about dark-skinned women with dark hair?
I think that's fine, but it needs to be done in expert hands. And that's where, in a way, You're skating on thin ice because it's easy to damage the dark skin.
If you're, for example, I have black girlfriends and guy friends who have like horrible problems with ingrown hair and would love to do laser, but they're like, there's no one good for me on that. Like, I can't do laser. Is that true?
Which is not true. So typically the African-American community has really dark hair, right? And the ingrown hairs, that's what that's called, is pseudofolliculitis barbae. Isn't that a great name? PFB, we call it. Mm-hmm. So people with that condition, they have all this inflammation going on from the ingrown hairs. And that actually leads to even darker skin. So I have no trouble treating those people, and I get great results. But it's not trivial. I can't tell you how many black guys who ruin their faces, they have scarring and so forth from shaving closely, but you can't just walk in and start blazing away with the laser. You have to precondition them, and then they do great.
When you devised this, you know, in the beginning it was introduced largely through dermatology practices, it seems like. It's now a highly commercialized product. Does that bother you? What do you feel about the sort of hyper-commercialization of this technology that you created?
Yeah, number one, that doesn't bother me at all. I don't really work for dermatologists. I work for patients. I work for people. And as long as it's being done properly, in good hands, you know, and it's valuable, that's fine with me. And I think it's kind of surprising how popular this has become. I think that
you didn't think it would be.
Well, who knows? But I think now, you know, we're looking at more than 20 years after the original
work.
What
do you think when you see the ads or hear the ads?
Well, I try to ignore them.
Really?
But I mean, you see them anyway, and I say, oh, that's fine. I don't advertise, by the way. I don't need to. But I guess what I was going to say is that it's now been more than two decades. There are multiple companies, multiple countries all over the world. It's clearly here to stay, and I feel proud about that. I think it's certainly helping, you know, a lot of people. And I was surprised when I was reading that it's the number one non-surgical cosmetic procedure.
The final question I have, Rox, of all the ways that you've used a laser, which one are you the most proud of?
Ooh, that's a great question.
That is a good question. I echo that.
I have to say it's probably the first thing that got me interested in this, which is treating babies with these vascular malformations. The these port wine stains, which are really common.
I'm having a hard time understanding.
It's a red birthmark, basically. They're common enough. It's about
like a mole, almost a red birthmark.
Yeah, it's red, okay. and not brown. Most so-called moles are brown or black. These are common. It's about 1 in 300 people that are born with them. They can be quite devastating. They can involve the brain. They can involve the eye. You get glaucoma.
Oh, I see. So it's not purely cosmetic.
Absolutely not. Yeah. And then over time, they actually darken and get larger and can cause problems. So you sort of replace a birthmark with a burn scar.
I see.
And, you know, I'm really very proud of that because we not only came up with a theory, but built a laser, showed that it worked, got it through the FDA, and that is still the only way we treat these kids, right?
Wow.
So it's
and what year was this? How
86 or something like that. I don't know what it is about me. I just love kids. Before I went to med school, I used to run a summer camp. I love my own kids. I love your kids too, right? So
no kids yet.
I like that one, not just because it worked well and it's lasted and it's kind of become the gold standard, but because in fact, you know, there is no other option and it's all about little children.
That was Dr. Rox Anderson, the man who invented laser hair removal. He was speaking with me and my NPR colleague, Aarti Shahani, in his office at Mass General Hospital. Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Asma Khalid, and this is Radio Boston.